The answer to cutting through and building trust isn't found in a sea of management jargon. It's in these three words. I'm Ron Tite, the author of Think, Do, Say: How to Seize Attention and Build Trust in a Busy, Busy World.
You talking loud, but saying nothing. You talking loud, but saying nothing. You talking loud, but saying nothing. Cutting through the static, rise above the noise. Don't you just love it when the people hear your voice?
What makes a great leader and what makes a great organization is really based on what they think, what they do, and what they say. Now, luckily, I got to sit down and chat with a few great leaders myself. Great friend of mine, Scott McCain, he's a keynote speaker and he's the author of Iconic and Create Distinction. There was one part of Distinction that I absolutely loved. Here's what he had to say. You know, you are an expert on distinction, but in your mind, what is distinction? What makes a brand or an organization distinct?
My definition of distinction is that you stand out in the marketplace from your competitors to the point that customers recognize there is a meaningful reason why they should do business with you as opposed to the competitors within your industry. There's a million places that make pizza. But when Domino's entered the marketplace years ago and said, we're going to get it to you in 30 minutes, now obviously they've changed that promise because of safety concerns.
Yeah.
But we realized that the commitment to be a delivery business, and it's going to be hotter and fresher and faster with them as opposed to the competition, gave us a meaningful reason to choose them instead of their competitors. That's where I find something being distinctive in its respective marketplace.
Yeah, and you know, mentioning Domino's, they've extended that out. I don't know if you saw this, but Domino's is now investing in paving roads.
Yeah.
So they're filling potholes and in paving roads, again, supporting that fundamental belief that we're going to get this to you as fast as we can so that it remains hotter and fresher. Yeah, it's kind of event marketing and in a way, but I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool way to do it. And that's the other thing that distinctive organizations do is they keep trying to reinforce what makes them unique within their industry. And your example of what Domino's did in terms of paving potholes is a great example of that. You know, rather than buy a bunch of more spots on, you know, local television about how fast we're going to get it there, the social proof of our commitment to get it there quickly, because we're even going to make it easier for you to come pick it up if you want to do that.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great campaign in terms of exploiting, in the positive sense, exploiting the differentiation that they have in the marketplace.
Now, do you think that people can apply your rules of distinction for their own personal careers as well, so that they become distinct and unique within a big organization?
That's a great question. I think they have to be more successful within your own organization or within your own professional endeavors. There are four cornerstones to distinction. The first one is clarity, that you're very specific about what you are and what you are not. Too many businesses try to be all things to all people, but too many professionals try to do that as well. So
yeah,
having that sense of clarity and purpose is extraordinarily important. Second was creativity, just finding one unique twist to what you do. And we see that in careers as well. Someone that, you know, takes a sabbatical or takes some time off, or the old story about Steve Jobs learning calligraphy, which made him think more about design, that there's something unique, just one little creative, innovative aspect of what you do. Third is communication, and there it's about narrative, it's about knowing the story, it's about being able to connect with a diverse group of customers, and finally is a customer experience focus, and gosh, we certainly need to do that individually as professionals as well, is how do we focus on our customers, whether the customers we're talking about are external, you know, people buying pizza, or our internal customers that we work with and seek to serve respectively within our own organization. So I think those four cornerstones of distinction apply individually as well as organizationally.
Yeah, your internal customer is bang on, because this is the problem I have with organizations that say, we're a customer-focused organization, we're a customer-focused brand, or we're a customer experience first organization, is that I find that especially kind of lower down the organizational ranks for people who don't have a customer-facing role. You know, I'm a clerk in procurement. those people think like that doesn't apply to me because I'm not customer. I don't provide customer service when in fact they do. It's just an internal customer. They may apply those rules of a customer experience to the CFO or the head of procurement or finance or whatever.
Yeah, I wrote about that in my first book, the executive with a tech company that said, you know, well, I'm chief financial officer. I don't have anything to do with customers. And I said, so you mean if you don't have customers, you'll still have finances to look after? I mean, yeah, we're all customer facing, customer focused. But you know what I find is that that's a very easy thing for leaders to say and a very difficult thing for them to execute. Yeah. Because getting back to that third cornerstone of communication, it means that the internal clerk has to understand her or his role in being part of that customer focus. And if they haven't been told that narrative, if they haven't been told that story of how they impact what happens with customers, then it's extraordinarily difficult to get the organization to be customer focused. I've got a buddy that was a prisoner of war in Vietnam for 6 years, and he was sitting in a restaurant one day, and a man walked up and introduced himself. And it turned out he is the guy that had packed the parachute that Captain Plum used when he ejected to safety.
Whoa.
And as my friend Charlie Plum tells the story, he said, I was horrified to think it never occurred to me that in the back office, so to speak, there was somebody packing parachutes that my life depended on.
Yeah.
And I think there's parallels with that in organizations. We don't get people to think about the folks that are packing their parachutes, because if you're serving an internal customer, eventually the external customer is going to benefit from that.
Yeah.
And we've got to tell people the narrative of that so that they get it through the power of story, not just through, you know, here's your job and here's your job description and I'm going to put you through training so you can execute these tasks on a repetitive basis. And they never see why it's so important that they do what they do.
Yeah. The way we refer to it in the book is, well, who do you do it for? And so if you have a customer facing, well, you do it for that external customer. If you're a cashier, it's the person at your till. But if you're in procurement, you might do it for the CFO or the head of procurement or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know you had an amazing customer experience, or I guess Tammy had an amazing customer experience. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, gosh, yeah. It was extraordinary. You know, she's rushing to meet me at a meeting, and I've flown in from a different part of the country. This is before we lived in Vegas. We're meeting up, and as you know, if you've been there, when you're checking in, like at Caesar's Palace, it's controlled pandemonium. It's barely controlled chaos. And so she's getting her stuff out of the car, and the limo driver, you know, is getting her stuff. I'd arranged for a car to pick her up at the airport and bring her to Caesar's. And, you know, she picks up her stuff and the car takes off. And it's literally not until she gets to the room that she realizes that one of the small suitcases that she packed wasn't there. She calls the limo driver, and he was just incredibly apologetic. So he went back to the airport, got it, found it. It was a baggage claim, ran it back, and absolutely took care of her in an amazing way. Gave her a card and said, you know, wherever you guys need to go, when you need your return trip to the airport, it's on me. And just went above and beyond, even followed up with her to make certain that everything was okay. And it did so much more. It was just a mistake. And, you know, we're all human. One of the things I talk about is the ultimate customer experience. We own the trademark on that term. And and the key is, look, customers don't want you to make it right. They want you to get it right.
Yeah.
But we're all human. And when we don't get it right, it's not only our efforts to make it right, it's the sincerity that we bring to that. And this limo driver, what impressed Tammy was not only his actions, that he was willing to go, you know, get the suitcase he forgot and take care of her and comp a future ride and all that. It was the extraordinary sincerity that he brought to the fact that he wanted his customer to be amazed and to be satisfied, to be blown away. And I think that's what we miss sometimes in this. You know, it's the airline employee saying, oh, we're sorry we messed that up. Here's 500 miles for your frequent flyer account. When the last thing I need is more miles, right? I'm looking for the airlines for 20,000 miles. I don't have to go. But that's the key, is not just what we're doing to make it right, but the sincerity and the humanity that we bring to it is part of what creates this compelling response that customers have.
Yeah. Now, in the first pillar of distinction. What was the first one?
Clarity.
Clarity. And, yeah. and you know, that people need to know what you stand for, right?
I think it's part of what we miss, Ron, is that we say this is who we are, but it's also just as important to define what we are not. And we overlook that sometimes, is mm-hmm. that where we're willing to say no is just as important as the points where we're willing to say yes. Because if you don't know what you'll say no to, then you aren't clear enough about who you are and what you're doing and what you're bringing in the marketplace, whether it's as a professional or as an organization. It's extraordinarily important that we do that.
Yeah. And the part of the book that really was the first part, I was like, oh, I got to write this down. I got to use this in the book. Was when you saying, the burgers at Shake Shack are unbelievably good. They're so tasty. I believe that what differentiates Shake Shack from the standard burger competition, as their customer, I don't give a damn why they make them so delicious. I just care that they do. And, you know, part of the thinking in the book is that the think part is like, you know, you need some sort of corporate purpose. I need to know what you believe in. But sadly, far too many brands have taken that purpose and belief and substituted in social cause and social issue. And they've kind of, everybody's running around kind of going, yeah, no, we believe in equality. That's what we are. But it's in fact like, well, that's not why you make a car.
Yeah.
The purpose is around, it has to be tied to the thing you do. But everyone's running around trying to be so woke now, so socially conscious that they're substituting in social cause and issue for corporate purpose. And it's beginning to get a little bit tired. Do you agree with that?
Ron, I totally agree with that. Look, at the end of the day, why would they not believe in equality? And why would they not believe in social justice? I want to do business with companies, not the ones that promote it, but one that it's part of the fabric. It's in their DNA. I shouldn't have to say to you, because you and I are friends, oh, by the way, Ron, I want you to know that I believe in equality.
Yeah, right.
Right? I mean, it should be a given.
Yeah.
And I think part of this dates back to the Simon Sinek Start With Why.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of great ideas and points in that book and in that philosophy. As entrepreneurs, we need a why to motivate us. We need this internal drive. You know, psychologists say motivation comes from your personal goals and your internal drive. And we need that. We need that as entrepreneurs. We need that as business people, as leaders.
Yeah.
But yet customers don't buy your why.
No.
They buy your how. Go on social media now and there are groups of owners of Teslas that are absolutely furious because they can't get the spare parts to repair their car.
Right.
And while they're all for, you know, saving the world and reducing emissions and all that, if you can't get the spare parts to repair your car and it's in the shop for 6 months because there's a backlog on spare parts, you're not really that concerned about the why of the organization when they can't execute on the how.
Yeah. Because Timmy's got to get to T-ball, damn it.
Well, yeah, you know, it is true. I mean, at the end of the day, yes, we do want to reduce emissions. At the end of the day, we do want to make the world cleaner. But I can't do that when my car's in the shop and now I've got to drive this gas hog that's spitting out stuff. I mean, we have to focus on the how. And yes, if there's nothing else to differentiate us, if we're identical to our competition, then our efforts in social causes may make a difference for a certain percentage of customers. But again, I think that should be a given. I think that should be what organizations are, because if you have to promote it, then doesn't that say something about the depth of your commitment?
Yeah.
I mean, it should be how you live, not what you have to advertise.
Yeah, the line we use is, I should experience your values, I shouldn't read them.
Yeah.
And do you get that a lot where people take your pillars of distinction around clarity and creativity and think like, oh, that means he wants me to do a funny YouTube video. Like, it's all about our marketing messaging, that we're going to be distinctive in how we communicate this opposed to through their action. Is that where their mind immediately goes?
Yeah, it's challenging. And that's part of what I work with organizations on is, you know, this is an old example, but it's kind of a classic example. Is that the Taylor family in St. Louis starting a little rental car business. They had to compete against Hertz and Avis and the big players in the industry. So they thought, what's one unique thing that we could do that would be creative, that would be innovative? They made a list of all of the points of contact that a rental car agency would have with a customer.
Yeah.
And they picked one. They said, we'll just do one of these. And there were 13 points of contact that they outlined. And they picked one. How does the customer access the product? And flipped it upside down.
Yeah.
And that little rental car company they started in the basement of the old St. Louis airport, they named Enterprise.
Yeah. We'll come right to your front door to get it.
Right. I mean, the car is identical. There's zero product variation in that business. It's not that Hertz has a better car for you to rent than Avis does or than Enterprise does. And so finding one unique, creative way to serve is what created the largest player in the business. So it's not that you have a funny spot, right? I mean, Wendy's could do Where's the Beef forever, but if the hamburger wasn't different than what you got at McDonald's or Burger King, then all you're doing is accelerating the pace at which customers are disappointed with your product.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the guy that spent the first 20 years of my life like coming up with the creative ideas for organizations to communicate their products. And I'd much prefer to write a really, really boring spot for Enterprise than a really funny spot for Hertz, because it's so much easier. My job to communicate, we'll come right to your front door to get it, is such a compelling message that you don't need a joke, that you don't, like, the message that's the core product, the core feature is unique enough to stand on its own. And that will trump a joke with a weak product every single time.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had a, I wrote about it in the book, but there was one time when Xerox came to us. You know, that very distinct and innovative company called Xerox. And, you know, we worked on a campaign, and so it was all about moving from product to solution. And we created something called the Document Cost Index. Mm. But the commercial that we worked on was, we took the president of Xerox Canada and we had him unplug a photocopier. And the line was, the last thing I want to do is sell you another copier. The first thing I want to do is save you money. And we're like, this is amazing. This rocks. It was a killer blitz. It sucked because it was the first thing he still wanted to do was sell them a copier. Every single salesperson in the organization, the first thing they wanted to do was sell them a copier. They had no desire to save them money. And it totally backfired.
I totally get it, yeah. Right? I mean, that's the thing. I think sometimes we don't give our audience or our customers enough credit, right? I mean, I do a lot of work in the automotive industry. It's one of our target industries. And at the end of the day, every customer knows you want to sell them a car.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, we can couch that in, you know, we want to, you know, make your transportation safe and effortless. But at the end of the day, you know, nobody gets paid unless we're selling cars.
Yeah.
And customers know that. They get that. And I think we have to appeal to how we can do what we do and make what you do easier or better or more luxurious or whatever that might be. But creativity is not being cute. It's finding an innovative way to serve customers that has traction and meaning from their perspective.
Right. Okay. Scott, thank you so much.
Hey, I'm privileged that you ask, and I'll see you soon.
That was my friend Scott McCain, keynote speaker and author of Iconic and Create Distinction. You can hear more interviews from Think Do Say at thinkdosay.com. You can find Think Do Say wherever you buy books. And if you're more of a listener, Think Do Say is also available as an audiobook through Audible and Amazon. And if you're already listening to the book in audio form, then just go back.